A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's the kind of prompt that sits with you. He's a 37-year-old guy living in Israel, married, done everything right to try to get on the property ladder, and after a decade of tenancy at will and unwanted relocations, the rental market is actually the biggest negative force in his life. But here's the bind. He can't find a political party that both wants to fix tenancy law and hold security views he can live with. The parties that care about housing have security positions he rejects. The parties that align with him on security have a blind spot the size of a bus on rental reform. So his question is, what do you do when democracy hands you a ballot full of choices, and none of them are yours? And he's asking whether this is just a personal frustration or something fundamentally broken in how democracy processes what voters actually want.
You're standing there with a slip of paper and you're supposed to be exercising the most fundamental right in a democracy, and instead you feel like you're betraying half of what you believe no matter which envelope you pick. The numbers bear it out. Rents in Israel are up something like 18% since 2022, according to IDI data. Housing affordability has been the number one issue in public opinion polling since 2021. And yet, it was not a top three issue in any party's manifesto in the last election.
Which is genuinely strange when you say it out loud. The thing most people are worried about doesn't appear in the top three priorities of any party's platform. That's not an oversight. That's a structural feature.
These are two of the most foundational things a government is supposed to secure for its citizens. And the party system has managed to arrange itself so that caring about both simultaneously makes you unrepresentable. So Daniel's dilemma isn't just timely, it's intensifying. More parties, more choices on paper, and yet somehow less actual representation of the things eating at people's daily lives.
He says he doesn't think it's responsible to be a single-issue voter, because if everyone just voted on their one pet issue, you'd end up with a parliament of 300 rent control parties, and a cannabis legalization caucus, and total incoherence. And he's right about that danger. But the alternative he's living is that multi-issue voters get no representation at all, because no party's platform matches their vector of concerns.
And this is where the Israeli system specifically makes things worse, because it's pure proportional representation with a low threshold and no geographic constituencies. In a district-based system like the US or the UK, you at least have one human being whose job it is to listen to you whether they agree with you or not.
And in a system with geographic districts, your local representative has to face you at the grocery store. If housing is the crisis in your neighborhood, they hear about it constantly, and their re-election depends on being seen to do something. The brands don't do nuance. A party's platform is whatever the leader and a small circle decided in a room.
And that's why Daniel's framing, political refugee, lands so hard. He's not apathetic, he's not uninformed, he's rationally responding to a system where the menu never has what you need, but you're still expected to order. The question Daniel's really asking, underneath the personal story, is whether this is a solvable problem at all.
It's not like he's asking for some boutique micro party that perfectly mirrors his soul. He explicitly rejects single-issue voting. He knows that road leads to 100 bodies and zero governance. If the structural reforms don't exist yet, or aren't coming, what do you actually do on election day when you're staring at a list of 40 parties, and not one of them is yours?
What Daniel's describing isn't apathy, and it isn't disengagement. It's the experience of someone who shows up, who reads the platforms, who wants to participate fully, and discovers the system has no slot for the combination of things he actually believes. He's not abstaining, he's displaced. And finally, the hard question, is there any structural reform, ranked choice voting, local representation, something else, that could actually let voters express what they want instead of picking the least worst bundle?
Pure proportional representation with a 3.25% threshold, 120 seats, the whole country is a single district. You don't vote for a person who represents your neighborhood.
The first thing to understand is the electoral threshold. Israel's is 3.25%, raised from 2% in 2014. That sounds like a technical detail, but it's the engine of fragmentation. Which means the feedback mechanism between voter and representative is almost non-existent.
4 seats worth of anger is not hard to find in a country of 9 million. And once you're in, you're in. You get state funding, committee seats, a platform. The incentive isn't to build a broad governing party. It's to carve out a narrow lane and defend it ruthlessly.
Since 2015, the Knesset has consistently had 10 to 15 parties per term. In 2022, 40 parties registered. 15 made it past the threshold. Among them, you had parties focused on ultra-Orthodox sectoral interests, Arab sectoral interests, pensioners, and one party literally called the Israelis, built around a television personality. In Israel, that channel simply doesn't exist. The entire representational relationship is mediated through the party brand. If the brand doesn't include your issue doesn't enter the Knesset. It's not that you're being ignored.
That's the thing, Daniel flagged. A party that forms rapidly as a splinter almost certainly lacks the depth of policy research needed for a coherent manifesto. The IDI research backs this up. That's what makes Daniel's rental frustration such a perfect case study. It's not a niche complaint. Roughly a third of Israeli households rent.
Which brings us to the second mechanism, and this one is under discussed. Israel is a single national district, 120 seats, one vote. There is no geographic representation at all. Here's the structural kicker. When you have no geographic constituencies, parties don't need to aggregate diverse local concerns into a coherent platform. They just need to differentiate themselves on the one or two dimensions that drive bloc identity. So you get 10 parties that all have detailed positions on settlements, and none that have a serious housing policy.
The political refugee isn't a failure of democracy in the abstract. It's what happens when the electoral system reduces every voter to a single axis, and you happen to live on two. But in a nationalist system, your re-election depends on how high the party leader placed you, which means your accountability runs upward, not downward. The voter is an abstraction.
And the average Israeli government since 1996 has lasted 1.8 years. The tenancy reform gets swapped for the defense portfolio or the religious affairs ministry. The voters' priorities are bargaining chips in a negotiation they never get to witness, let alone influence.
We saw this play out with Yisrael Beitenu. It started as a secular Russian immigrant interest party, with a specific constituency and specific grievances. Then it pivoted hard to security, and its original base got stranded. The party didn't break any rules. It just followed the incentives. Security gets you leverage in coalition talks. Potholes and rent control do not.
You've got three interlocking mechanisms. A low threshold that rewards fragmentation. No geographic accountability, so local issues have no champion. It's actually worse than zero, because developing comprehensive policy costs time and staff and political capital, and none of that helps you survive the next coalition negotiation. So you get these hollowed-out platforms. The party has a paragraph on the leader's signature issue and maybe a sentence on everything else. If you're a voter who cares about five things, four of them get a sentence.
Which brings us to the mathematical reality Daniel's living. Imagine policy space as having multiple dimensions. Security, housing, economy, religion and state, civil rights. Your ideal point is somewhere in that five-dimensional space. The probability that any party's platform coincides with your ideal point shrinks exponentially with each dimension you add. That's not representation. That's a menu written by the chefs, not the diners. The system is fragmented, but here's where it gets really perverse. This fragmentation doesn't just produce noise. It actively suppresses certain kinds of issues. Daniel's rental crisis is the textbook case.
It's what political scientists call a diffuse interest. Tenants are a huge group, something like 2.5 million Israelis rent, but they don't vote as a bloc. They don't have a shared institution, a shared identity, a shared leadership structure that can deliver votes in exchange for policy. Homeowners, by contrast, are a smaller group, but far more organized. What's instructive is the 2024 rental reform bill. It had cross-party support from individual MKs. People from Likud, from Yesh Atid, from Labor, all thought it was reasonable, and it died in committee anyway.
You've got this strange inversion. The number one concern in public opinion polling since 2021 is housing affordability. And yet, it didn't crack the top three in any party's manifesto in the last election. The whip system converts a multi-issue legislature into a single-axis voting machine.
And Daniel's instinct about the single-issue trap is exactly correct on the diagnosis, but slightly off on the timing. He says if everyone voted single-issue, you'd get hundreds of parties. The breakaway mechanism feeds this directly. Think about the 2021 cycle. Yamuna breaks from Likud. New Hope breaks from Likud. Blue and white forms, splinters, reforms. Every single one of these was built around a personality with a founding narrative about leadership and national direction. None of them produced a detailed housing policy. None of them had a serious position on tenancy law.
The market for political parties is not a free market of ideas. It's a market of organized leverage. If you can't deliver a block, you don't get a party. If you don't get a party, your issue doesn't get a seat at the coalition table. You've got a system that incentivizes shallow platforms, a threshold that forces small parties into unstable alliances, a breakaway rule that lets personalities fragment the policy space further, and no geographic representation to give voters an alternative channel.
That brings us to the coalition black hole. Let's say a tenant-focused party somehow got 5 seats, which is already a stretch given the organizing problem. They enter coalition negotiations. What happens when you try to fix it? Because Israel has tried. The electoral threshold was raised from 2% to 3.25% in 2014 explicitly to reduce fragmentation. The number of parties in the Knesset went from 10 to 12 in the following election.
Which makes a certain kind of sense once you think about it. Raising the threshold doesn't make small parties disappear. It forces them into shotgun marriages to clear the bar, and those alliances splinter the moment the election is over. You get the same fragmentation, plus a fresh layer of resentment.
The direct election of the Prime Minister was the other big experiment, from 1996 to 2001. The idea was that voters could split their ticket, one vote for Prime Minister, one for party, which in theory would let them express nuanced preferences. What actually happened was the opposite. People gave their prime ministerial vote to a major candidate and then felt free to throw their party vote to tiny niche lists. They abandoned it after 5 years. If renters are hurting, Labour or National has to address it, because there's no coalition partner to blame.
A mixed member system would shrink their power, so they kill it. In Israel's hyper-fragmented system, major parties can ignore diffuse interests, precisely because they can always point at coalition partners and say, "Our hands were tied." Fragmentation becomes a shield against accountability.
If they don't win, your second choice gets counted. It reduces the spoiler effect. No electoral vehicle emerged from it. Same story with the 2011 social justice protests, which were enormous, hundreds of thousands in the streets. That movement produced no lasting party. The energy dissipated into the same fragmented landscape it was protesting against.
Because street energy doesn't automatically convert into electoral power. You need organization. You need a slate of candidates. You need policy depth. You need to clear a threshold. And the threshold, as we've established, rewards narrow intensity, not broad discontent. A movement of hundreds of thousands of frustrated renters is actually harder to convert into seats than a movement of 40,000 highly motivated settlers. The deeper issue is the bloc structure. Israeli voters don't really vote for parties. They vote for blocs. Right, left, Arab, Haredi. Within a bloc, parties differentiate on secondary issues to fight over the same voters.
When Daniel calls himself a political refugee, he's not being dramatic. He's identified something structural. The system is optimized to deliver for organized blocs and incumbents. Daniel's rental reform is a perfect example. It's what political scientists call a cross-cutting issue. It affects renters on the left and renters on the right with complete indifference to their security views. But because neither bloc organizes around it, no party in either bloc makes it a priority. The issue has no natural coalition.
We've got a problem that standard reforms don't touch. Raising thresholds backfires. Direct election backfired. Regional constituencies are blocked. RCV solves a different problem. What's left?
There's a more radical idea that's been kicking around for a while. Liquid democracy, or what some people call issue-based voting. The basic concept is that instead of delegating your entire vote to one party for 4 years, you can delegate your vote on different issues to different representatives.
I'd start with this. Except that no party will match you perfectly. That sounds like resignation, but it's actually liberation. Once you stop waiting for the Goldilocks option, you can get strategic. One approach is a weighted issue scorecard. You're not looking for a Goldilocks party anymore. You're assembling your own representation, issue by issue.
And there are real-world experiments to look at. The German Pirate Party built its platform around liquid democracy and got 8.9% of the vote in the 2011 Berlin state election.
For the systemic reformer, and Daniel clearly is one, there are two changes worth pushing. First, raise the electoral threshold to 5%. That forces broader coalitions to form before the election, not after. Israel already did this once, going from 2 to 3.25% in 2014. It's politically brutal, but it has precedent. Second, introduce a mixed member system with geographic districts, so local issues like housing actually have a champion who faces constituents directly.
And the party couldn't make the transition from interesting internal process to actual governance.
The experiment proved the concept is technically possible and politically unsustainable. The renters' rights movement in the U.S. has shifted local policy in dozens of cities. Sustained organizing can force parties to absorb an issue, even in a fragmented system, because eventually, the bloc becomes too large to ignore.
They haven't implemented liquid democracy, but the plumbing exists. The technical barriers are solvable. The human barriers are harder.
What are the human barriers? It's just optimized for something other than what he wants. And optimization can, in theory, be changed.
If I delegate my housing vote to someone, I need to trust they'll actually represent my view and not drift. And third, coalition governance. Parliamentary systems work because parties bundle policies and negotiate compromises. If every vote is fluid and issue-specific, you have no stable majority to pass a budget or form a government. You might get perfect representation on paper and total paralysis in practice. Right now, the ballot gives you one binary choice, this bundle or that one. That's a pretty blunt instrument for the inside of a human brain.
That's where some of the more speculative ideas get interesting. Ranked choice voting, for instance. You rank parties in order of preference, and if your first choice doesn't clear the threshold, your vote transfers to your second. It doesn't solve the bundle problem, but it at least removes the fear of wasting your ballot on a smaller party that actually represents you.
Approval voting goes further. You can vote for every party you find acceptable, not just one. Quadratic voting is the really wild version, where you get a budget of voting credits and spending more on one issue costs you exponentially. To your second choice party, the one that's close enough on your top issues that they could win you over if they adjusted. If Daniel votes for a party that aligns with him on security but ignores housing, he's telling that party, "You already have me." If he votes for a party that's weaker on security but stronger on housing, he's telling the security-aligned party, "You lost me because of housing." That's information the party system can actually process.
It's not representation in the full sense. It's triage. But it's triage that might, over multiple election cycles, pull a neglected issue onto a bloc's agenda. The political refugee phenomenon isn't going anywhere. If anything, more fragmentation means more voters will find themselves stranded between platforms that each get one thing right and everything else wrong. The question is whether enough people recognize this as a structural problem rather than a personal failure of not being able to find the right party.
Because if you keep searching for a Goldilocks that doesn't exist, you stay stuck. I want to be clear about something here because it's easy to hear all this and walk away feeling like democracy itself is broken. It's not. The political refugee problem isn't a bug.
Daniel's frustration is rational. The system really is working against him. No electoral system can perfectly represent every voter's unique preference vector across every issue dimension. The math doesn't allow it. You can't have a parliament of 9 million customized platforms.
Some systems handle the trade-off better than others. Israel's combination of pure proportional representation, a low threshold, and zero geographic constituencies is basically the worst-case scenario for multi-issue voters.
In the interwar period, the Azores had exactly one tennis court with standard dimensions, located on São Miguel, and its net height was checked weekly against a wooden gauge carved from a ship's spar.
That second axis of representation, the geographic one, creates a channel for cross-cutting issues that don't fit neatly on the National Party axis. It starts with voters admitting the system is doing exactly what it's built to do, and deciding that's not good enough.
This has been My Weird Prompts. We're at myweirdprompts.com. Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.